Sagan nodded and turned her gaze back to the science station, which was a rather modest collection of buildings. On the north end of the compound were the Oban barracks, which were surprisingly compact. The Oban either did not want or need anything approaching privacy. Like humans, the Oban collected together at mealtimes. Many of them would be in the mess hall adjacent to the barracks. Harvey's job was to create a distraction there and draw attention to himself, leading the Oban and other parts of the station toward him. On the south end of the compound was the energy generator regulator, housed in a large shed-like building. The Oban used what were essentially huge batteries, which were constantly charged by windmills placed at a distance from the station. Seaborg's job was to cut the power somehow. He'd have to work with what he found there to make it happen. Between the two was the science station proper. After the power dropped, Sagan would enter, find Bhutan, and extract him, pounding him unconscious, if need be, to get him to the capture pod. If she came across Dirac, she would need to make a quick determination whether he was useful or if he had gone traitor like his progenitor. If it was the latter, she would have to kill him, clean and quick. Sagan suspected she was going to have to kill Dirac no matter what. She didn't really think she would have enough time to decide whether he was trustworthy or not, and she didn't have her brain pal upgrade to read his thoughts on the matter. Sagan allowed herself a moment of mirthless amusement at the fact that her mind-reading ability, so secret and classified, was also completely useless to her when she really needed it. Sagan didn't want to have to kill Dirac, but she didn't see that she had a whole lot of options in the matter. Maybe he's already dead, Sagan thought. That would save me the trouble. Sagan shook the thought out of her head. She didn't like what that particular line of thought was saying about her. She would worry about Dirac when and if Dirac showed up. In the meantime, the three of them had other things to worry about. In the end, what really mattered was getting Bhutan to that capture pod. We do have one advantage, Sagan thought. None of us really expects we're going to survive. That gives us options. Are we ready? Sagan asked. We're ready, Seaborg said. Fuck yes, Harvey said. Let's do it then, Sagan said. Harvey, you're on. Jared woke from a brief nap to find Zoe staring up at him. He smiled. Hello, Zoe, he said.
Hello,
Zoe said, and frowned.
I forgot your name,
she said. I'm Jared, he said.
Oh, yeah,
Zoe said.
Hello, Mr. Jared.
Hello, sweetie, Jared said, and once again he found it hard to keep his voice even. He glanced down at the stuffed animal Zoe carried. Oh, is that Celeste, the elephant? He asked. Zoe nodded and held it up for him to see.
Uh-huh, she said. I used to have a Babar, but I lost it. Do you know Babar?
I do, Jared said. I remember seeing your Babar, too.
I miss my Babar,
Zoe said in a little voice, but then perked up.
But then Daddy got me Celeste after he came back.
How long was he away? Jared asked. Zoe shrugged.
A long time,
she said.
He said he had things he had to do first, but he said he sent the Oban to protect me and watch out for me.
And did they? Jared asked.
I guess so,
she said. She shrugged and said in a low voice,
I don't like the Oban. They're boring.
I can see that, Jared said. I'm sorry you and your dad were kept apart for so long, Zoe. I know he loves you very much.
I know,
Zoe said.
I love him, too. I love Daddy and Mommy and all the grandparents I never met, and my friends from Kabul, too. I miss them. Do you think they miss me?
I'm sure they do, Jared said, and willfully avoided thinking about what happened to her friends. He looked back at Zoe and saw her being pouty. What's wrong, sweetheart? He asked.
Daddy says that I have to go back to Phoenix with you,
Zoe said.
He says that you're going to stay with me so he can finish up some work here.
Well, your daddy and I talked about that, Jared said carefully. Do you not want to go back?
I want to go back with Daddy, she said plaintively. I don't want him to stay.
He won't be gone very long, Jared said. This just the ship that we brought here to take you home is really small, and there's only going to be room in it for you and me.
You could stay, Zoe said.
Jared laughed.
I wish I could, honey. But we'll have fun while we wait for your daddy, I promise. Is there anything you'd like to do when we get to Phoenix Station?
I want to buy some candy, Zoe said. They don't have any here. Daddy says the Oban don't make any. He tried to make me some once, though.
Well, how was it? Jared asked.
It was really bad, Zoe said. I want jawbreakers and butterscotch and lollipops and jelly beans. I like the black ones.
I remember that, Jared said. The first time I saw you, you were eating black jelly beans.
When was that?
Zoe asked.
It was a long time ago, sweetie, Jared said. But I remember it like it was yesterday. And when we go back, you can have any candy you want.
But not too much, Zoe said, because then my stomach will hurt.
Exactly right, Jared said. And we really couldn't have that. A stomach ache just wouldn't do.
Zoe smiled up at Jared and broke his heart.
You're silly, Mr. Jared, she said.
Well, Jared said, smiling back, I try.
Okay, I'm going to go,
Zoe said.
Daddy's taking a nap. He doesn't know I'm here. I'm going to go wake him up because I'm hungry.
You go do that, Zoe, Jared said. Thank you for visiting, Zoe. I'm really glad you came by.
Okay,
Zoe said, turned around and waved back to him as she went.
Bye, Mr. Jared. See you later.
See you later, Jared said, knowing he wouldn't.
Love you,
Zoe said, in that casual way that kids do.
Love you, too,
Jared whispered, as a parent. He waited until he heard a door close down the adjoining hall before he let himself release the ragged, tearing breath he had been holding in. Jared looked at the lab, his eyes flitting over the console Bhutan had brought in to manage the consciousness transfer, and lingering on the second creche Bhutan had brought in, the one in which he would place himself before sending over his consciousness to Jared's body, wiping out Jared's existence as if he were simply a placeholder, something put there to mark time until the body's true owner could take possession. But then, Jared thought, wasn't that actually the case? It was Bhutan who was intended to be in this body. That was why it was created. Jared was allowed to exist only because Bhutan's consciousness refused at first to take up residence. It had to be coaxed in to share the mind space Jared had created as caretaker. And now, irony of ironies, Bhutan wanted it all, wanted to push Jared aside entirely. Damn it, Jared thought crazily. I just got this brain set up the way I like it. He laughed. And the laugh sounded shaky and weird to his ears. He tried to calm himself, bringing himself into a more rational state, breath by breath. Jared heard Bhutan in his head, describing the wrongs of the Colonial Union, and heard the voice of Kynan, whom he trusted more to be honest about these things, echoing the sentiments. He looked into his own past as a member of the Special Forces, and the things they had done in the name of making the universe safe for humanity. The Colonial Union did straddle every line of communication, directed every course of action, kept every aspect of humanity under tight control, and fought nearly every other race they knew of with persistent ferocity. If the universe was as hostile as the Colonial Union said, perhaps this level of control was justified. for the overarching racial imperative of holding ground and making a place for humans in the universe. But if it wasn't, if what was fueling the colonial union's constant wars was not competition from the outside, but paranoia and xenophobia from the inside, then Jared knew that he and everyone he had known inside the Special Forces and out of it could have, in one way or another, led to the slow death of humanity that Bhutan assured him was out there. He would have chosen to refuse to fight. But, Jared thought, Bhutan isn't reliable. Bhutan labeled the colonial union as evil, but Bhutan also chose to do evil things. He caused three separate races, two with long-standing issues, to come together to attack the colonial union, exposing billions of humans and billions of other intelligent creatures to the threat of war. He had experimented upon and killed Special Forces soldiers. He was planning to kill every single member of Special Forces and every other CDF soldier with his BrainPal virus, something akin to a genocide considering the numbers and the unique makeup of the Colonial Defense Forces. And in killing the Colonial Defense Forces, Bhutan would leave the colonies and Earth defenseless against any race who chose to claim one of the colonies as its own. The Oban couldn't stop the land rush from these other races, and probably wouldn't even if they could. The reward for the Oban was not land, but consciousness. The unprotected colonists would be doomed, Jared realized. Their colonies would be destroyed, and there would be nowhere for them to go. It wasn't in the nature of the races in this part of the galaxy to share their worlds. Earth, with its billions, might survive. It would be hard to displace billions of humans without a fight. The more sparsely populated and less ecologically burdened colony planets would be far more attractive. But if someone decided to attack Earth, and the Earth had indeed been held back by the Colonial Union for its own purposes, it wouldn't be able to fully defend itself. It would survive, but the damage would be immense. "Doesn't Bhutan see this?" Jared asked himself. Perhaps he did, but chose to believe that it wouldn't happen that way. But maybe he simply never considered the consequences of his actions. When the Oban contacted him, perhaps all Bhutan saw was a people so desperate for the thing he could give them that they would do anything to get it. Maybe Bhutan asked for the moon and didn't give a thought to what he would do with the moon once he had it. Maybe Bhutan didn't really think the Oban would really, truly give him the war he asked for. Interlaced within all of this, Jared felt a sick-making worry for Zoe. What would happen to her if Bhutan failed or was killed? What would happen to her if he succeeded? Jared felt guilty for worrying about what would happen to one small child when billions of lives would be altered or ended. But he couldn't help himself. As much as anything, he was looking for a way where Zoe lived through all of it. Jared felt overwhelmed by the choices he needed to make, and underwhelmed by the information he had to make them with, and utterly bereft at how little he would be able to do about any of it. He felt like he was probably the last person in the world who should be wrestling with all of this. But there was nothing to be done about it now. He closed his eyes and considered his options. An hour later, Jared opened his eyes as Bhutan came through the door, trailed by an Oban.
"You're awake," Bhutan said.
"I am," Jared said.
"It's time for me to make the transfer," Bhutan said. "I've programmed in the process and run the simulations. It looks like it's going to run perfectly. There's no point in putting it off anymore."
"Far be it from me to stop you from killing me," Jared said, casually. Bhutan paused. Jared saw that coming right out and mentioning his incipient murder disturbed Bhutan.
"Good," Jared thought.
"About that," Bhutan said. Before we do the transfer, I can run a directive that will put you to sleep if you want.